You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
All right, welcome to this episode, episode 36 of the U Talk podcast. I'm Grant Bagby at Grant TBS on Twitter.
And I'm Joseph Silverzweig at J Silverzweig and at P12 Fog on Twitter.
And he's finally gotten sick of me mispronouncing his last name. So,
well, I'm here every week. We're going to be with you every week. I should start introducing myself.
Right? Sounds good. No, let's please do. So please find us, tornbysports.com, utenation.com, pac12blog.com. There's a few .coms for you to look at. And, of course, you can find the UTalk podcast wherever you're listening on tornbysports.com, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher. And we're working on getting even more places to carry us so you can search it, find it, and get to it easily. We are also on Google Play for those of you who may be investing in some Google Pixels as they have been released. But let's get into the show. Let's all, as usual, let's start with our quick hitters. And we'll go around Pac-12, see if we have anything to add to these games that Ute fans might care about or just general observations. Game number one on my list of last week, Washington beats Cal 38-7. I don't have any. Who's surprised? Not me.
The first three games of the season, I thought Cal was like, hey, man, maybe bowl game this year for Cal. They look better. They're kind of winning ugly, but winning ugly is not something Cal's ever been good at. Maybe, nope. They look exactly like we expected Cal to look, and a 3-4-5 win team. Hard to imagine they'll get to a bowl game. Not that you wanted them to win against Washington if you're a Cal fan, but you wanted them to not lose by 31 and be held scoreless in the first half.
Yeah, and there is good news for Cal. I think they'll beat the next team I'm going to read off, which is Oregon State loses to USC 38-10. We will talk Gary Anderson, not
we'll
here.
We'll come up, but it's got to talk about it.
Yeah. All right. Other game in
and there's nothing to say about that.
Yeah,
game.
I mean,
it's just as expected.
Northwest team Washington State beats Oregon 33-10.
I was surprised by that result. I thought Washington State was going to win, but my numbers had Oregon as keeping it really close. Their defense has been good all season, and they've mostly been riding a running back. Although, despite not getting any credit for it, Herbert was quietly putting together the best season for a quarterback in the Pac-12. He topped in QBR, lots of other statistics, so they really feel his absence. And I hope that he gets fully better and has a great career, but I hope that that happens the week after Utah plays, which I believe is in 3 weeks now.
It's in a few weeks, yep. Interesting thing, Oregon and their amazing offense of years past scored 0 points in the second quarter, 0 points in the third quarter, and 0 points in the fourth quarter. That Washington State has a defense. And
they're good, man.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens when the Apple Cup comes around. I'm sure fellow Torn by Sports podcast, the Dog Pod, will be talking about that game a lot. I look forward to that episode. But next we have, finally, of the Pac-12, excluding the Utah game, Arizona beats Colorado 45-42.
327 rushing yards for Khalil Tate, which is a FBS quarterback rushing record. Great week for him. I continue to stick by my theory that Arizona does not stink. I think their two losses have come to Utah and to Houston. Mm-hmm. I think that those two teams are both going to finish with 8 or more wins, and Arizona's a good team, and that's a good win. Utah hasn't beaten anybody. It's starting to look like beating Arizona was a meaningful victory. And Colorado, man, gosh, they're 0-3 in the conference. They don't look terrible, but they're 0-3 in the conference, and I don't see how they come back from that.
Well, they're just not stopping anyone at this point. But either way, I will say this, you know, after talking to our guys at a Wildcat Radio when we did play Arizona, it was fun to watch my Twitter feed pop up with, oh my gosh, Khalil Tate. So that was fun for, you know, I'm happy for him, whatever. Make the Pac-12 South look good outside of Colorado. But either way, all right, so the other quick hitter I wanted to talk about is Gary Anderson is out at Oregon State. They mutually
walked away from $12 million guaranteed dollars.
So here's the question. Would you have walked away from $12 million, Mr.?
You know, I can't answer the question because there's a key difference between Gary Anderson and I. I don't already have $12 million. So, no, I would do almost anything for $12 million because that would set my family up for life. And that would be amazing. But if I already had $12 million, would I pass up another $12 million? I'd like to think I would because I really like my family and I like simple kind of stuff and I don't want to be miserable every day when I go to work. And guess what? $12 million is enough money. So I think I would have passed up my second $12 million, and I think that's what Gary Anderson did.
See, here's the thing. You hear about the athletes going broke. You don't hear about coaches going broke as much. But I'm sure he was spending... He does not just have the $12 million or whatever he's made at Oregon State in pocket. So it's curious. It's interesting to me.
The man's 53 years old. He's got to get to 12 years out of the money he's already made to get to his Social Security checks, right? Which are probably pretty generous since he's been making a lot of money for a while now. He's got to have something socked away, right? I think the difference between an athlete is you give somebody $20 million when they're 19 or 22, they go buy a Learjet. You give a 45-year-old man $10 million, say, well, I'm going to put $9 million into a diversified investment portfolio and I'll, you know, buy myself a Corvette. Like, he's probably been pretty responsible with it. I don't think he would have quit if he wasn't because he would have needed the money. But it's just, sure. I think most people thinking about that decision, I've seen a lot of sort of speculation, oh, well, maybe he was up to no good or he's in trouble or something like that. And I just don't think that's fair because there's such a huge difference between your first and your second $10 million. You know what I mean? I mean, you think about, would you take a job where you made $100,000 a year that sucked? Yeah. But would you take a job that sucked twice as much to make $200,000 a year? A lot of people would say no to that. And I think something to remember is that being a head coach is a cool job, but it's not a good job.
No, it sucks, honestly.
It's 100 hours a week. You're at the whim of 17-year-old kids and their a-hole parents, and you have to fly all over the country all year long. Sometimes it's recruiting, sometimes it's games. You're up in the middle of the night, huge amounts of stress, huge amounts of pressure. The media is constantly on you. That's a lot. That's a lot to put up with. So I wonder if he won't pop up doing TV, or maybe he's like, you know, I just want to be a defensive coordinator. I just want to call plays and coach kids and not have to deal with all that stuff. Or maybe he goes and is like a high school head coach because nobody cares and he can just kind of have fun and do football. So we'll see. I mean, if he turns around and he takes a job, you know, at Boise State or something, or Utah State, then that's a little bit fishier. But everything Gary Anderson has ever been done is consistent with a guy who frankly doesn't love it. You know, maybe he likes to coach, but he doesn't love the atmosphere and the glitz and all that stuff. Everything he's ever said, everything he's ever done has been pretty consistent with that. So I kind of take him at his word that he walked away because he thought it was the right thing to do.
Well, I'd take the money personally. But,
and I think most people would. It's an unusual
position. I mean, for all the stressful reasons you mentioned, I'd take the money. But either way, as much as it pains me to say this, we have to move on to the game that happened last week.
No, weekend. I don't want to talk about it.
And the Stanford game, ultimately, it reminds me of a video. A video of some teenager thinking he's cool, and he's going to push over this dead tree, and then it falls on his head and takes him to the ground. I feel like that teenager right now. Because last week, we were ridiculous confident in the Utes beating Stanford, and that didn't happen. And Stanford totally deserved to win that game. Like, the score was a 3-point score, but, you know, it felt, honestly, that as a Utah fan, and this is somewhat depressing, especially after the first pick in the late in the fourth quarter, it officially felt like maybe that was what the BYU game felt like for BYU fans. It's like, they're beating us. We shouldn't be in this game, but yet we are. I don't know. But here's the thing that bothers me the most. I feel like I was super hyped with the Troy Taylor hiring, and I guess there are two aspects of this game. There's the players' execution, which we can talk plenty about that, and I'm sure we will. And there's the coaching part of it, which Kyle Whittingham, over the many years that I've been a Utah fan, has trained me to think if something is askew, it's the coaches. It's coaching.
It's their responsibility to take care of the players.
Exactly. So then, last week, I said, here's Troy Taylor's opportunity to prove to us. He's had 2 weeks to game plan. He's had 2 weeks to work with Troy Williams. And he can show that he knows how to adjust his game plan and prepare for a team in it, a defense that was average at best, and he didn't do it.
So, break this down here. Though the first thing is that the feeling that Utah shouldn't have been in that game, I totally disagree with. Utah gained 382 yards. Stanford gained 384 yards. It was a legitimately close game throughout. This was a back-and-forth affair, and I think that the Utes were played well enough to win in general. Certainly not
correction.
Say,
the defense played well
not
enough.
Not going to say they deserve to win, or, you know, except for the, you know, volleyball score. None of that nonsense. But I don't think that they got, you know, their tails handed to them and sent out of the stadium, but the score seemed closer than it was. I think it was a good game. And I think that the offensive game plan was good. It's just, it doesn't matter how open the receivers are if the quarterback is not going to be able to make those throws. And whether you want to say, I mean, some people were really, really hard on Troy Williams, and I think he had one of his worst games as a Utah quarterback for him personally in terms of his execution. But you can't game plan an accurate throw. And there were just, I mean, you go back and you watch that game and guys were open every single play. And for whatever reason, it was just a really tough performance from Troy Williams. I felt like I was watching somebody in therapy. I felt like he was working through issues, and he was so in his head, and it was all emotional, and it was really, really, I mean, it was painful for me to watch, because I think he's a great guy, and I've been really impressed with him personally. The interactions that we have a chance to have with him and to see him, you know, press conferences and things like that. And that was just, it was just brutal to watch. And those two picks at the end were such bad decisions and not Troy Williams decisions. They just didn't fit with anything we'd seen from him before. Except there was one pass, I want to say it was against Cal, one of his first games last season, where he like threw into triple coverage in the red zone and got picked off, and everybody said, "What were you doing?" That was the last time, and this was the third or fourth game last season, that he made a baffling, head scratching decision. But he kind of lost it there in the fourth quarter. The whole thing was on his shoulders, and it
well
fell down.
I wonder if. So himself and others in his camp, in his personal circle, had put too much pressure on. Because if you're looking at it from Troy Williams, he would. I refuse to say he won 9 games for us last year, because there's a NFL caliber O-line and running back that had a lot to do with that. But so that that line of thought pisses me off. But Troy Williams goes into this game having lost his starting spot to begin the year, and here's his chance, because the Utes will play whoever's the better player. Here's his chance with 2 weeks of preparation to prove that he should be the starter over Huntley. So
instead
that when Huntley,
Huntley
comes back, all of a sudden Troy Williams is a starter, because look how great he played against Stanford. Look how great he played against potentially USC. Like, here's this huge opportunity, and he blew it. He blew it. It took me back to early last season. My favorite play in the red zone is a fake handoff to the running back, and then the quarterback rolls the opposite way, and the tight end leaks out, and he's right there on the goal line. Super easy pass to make. Guess, as a matter of fact, Huntley has made that pass sidearmed this season.
Yes.
He adjusted his defender. Troy Williams last year, when they made that call, blew that pass. And that was when I realized that the short stuff is not going to work for Troy Williams. And
he's not accurate.
He isn't. And unfortunately, Troy Taylor's offense is a boom, boom, boom type play, where those reads, those quarterback reads, is you look, you move, you look, you move, you look, you move, and then you throw the short stuff. And it dinks and dunks it. And I think it's intentionally, I'm no football coach, but I think it's made to set up so that when those wide receivers, the defense is so used to running and short routes, that then all of a sudden that wide receiver does a little hitch and takes it long, that sucker's wide open. And unfortunately, Troy Williams, that's just not his game. And it's unfortunate.
He just doesn't have that skill set of that short, accurate pass that lets... I mean, you saw one pass that worked, where Darren Carrington was coming across the formation on a kind of extended drag route, and he hit him just right on the money, and Carrington was able to not slow down for the pass, but just run with the ball, and he picked up another 10, 15 yards on that. That's Troy Taylor's offense, and if you're always... 8 inches too low, or 6 inches behind, or if the ball just kind of flutters its way in there and it takes a minute for the receiver to get a hold of it, you can't run that offense. And I think that was ultimately why Tyler Huntley won the job, was that short accuracy. But I want to go to something you mentioned, which is the offense. I mean, enough about poor Troy Williams. If I was his quarterback coach, I would say, all right, I'm going to look at these 6 plays. Here's this 39-yard bomb to Singleton, and here's that pass to Carrington that I mentioned. Here's the touchdown pass to Carrington. That's what you can do. So I don't care about what you didn't do. I don't care. You know what mistakes you made. You're a professional. You've done this long enough. You know exactly what you need to work on. You are capable of so much more than that. Now let's go beat USC. I mean, that's all I have to say about it. But I want to talk about the line. I think that Tyler Huntley is clearly disguising some serious problems with the offensive line, particularly on the right side of the offensive line, with regard to pass protection. And I want to pull this into kind of the stats stuff. People love to talk about returning starters. They love to talk about experience. They go, well, we got to get these guys some experience. An offensive line, they'll gel and they'll do this. The stats don't really back that up. The stats say, for the most part, you get your player, you figure out who he is over the course of maybe 12, maybe 18 games, but by midway through the second season, you know exactly who that guy is. And the only way to improve on that guy is to get a new player. And I think that we've seen enough from most of these linemen to say, if we want better line play, we need better line players. And I think they're there, and I'm interested to see what some of the freshmen who just aren't developed physically enough are going to do. But it wouldn't surprise me to start seeing, as those guys get bigger and stronger and learn the offense, if they start replacing some of these guys who are starting right now. Because Huntley's sort of electric mobility is hiding a lot of warts in that pass protection. I mean, Williams needed more time than he had, and some of it was a little bit of happy feet and stuff, but the offensive line is definitely a weakness. It's always going to be a weakness. We put four linemen in the NFL last year, and you don't replace them. You don't just pull in your back pocket and pull out four more NFL offensive linemen. But I think there's probably better players on the roster or will be recruited soon.
Well, one, I believe we flipped two O linemen commits that happened over the weekend. I believe
one of them's a.
I know one was a BYU
tight end defenseman.
Oh, okay, and then we had the O lineman flip from BYU.
Kump, and he looks awesome. By the way, he's a missionary kid, which always really frustrates me. Because I just wanted to play, and now I have to wait 2 years. And will there even be a need for him in 2 years? And is that commitment actually solid? So I tend not to get too excited about mission kids and just wait and see. I don't put him down as a class of 2018. He's a class of 2020. And that's when he's going to get here, and his commitment doesn't matter until signing day 2020. But he is a really good player, and is in the physical mold of. Honestly, Jake Long, he's 6'5", 3-something, but cut, right? It's not this big kind of heavy guy who's very, very strong, but maybe struggles a little bit with quickness because they have extra weight. There is no extra weight on Kump. He's a physically very, very impressive specimen. I think there's some development that needs to happen there, and I don't want to make the player comparison to a player like Jake Long. But the physical attributes are there. It's a rare combination of size and agility and true athleticism that you don't usually get to see in a player most of Utah.
Yeah. Well, either way, I mean, we can just move on from this game after this, honestly.
Please, the
offensive line has been a problem all year. I mean, Huntley went down potentially our offensive line didn't protect him.
Yep.
I mean, it was blindside. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And it's interesting because if you think about it, for how many years has the Utes, they've depended on offensive linemen and running backs to carry the offensive load, and we stayed close in games and came through, and we won a bunch of games in the Pac-12. And now this year, it's almost completely flipped. We're depending on our skill players and not our offensive line and run game to really carry us through games. And it's a completely different mentality and type of football that Utah fans just haven't seen. But let's move on.
4-1, though.
Yeah, 4-1. I mean, we're still holy
it's
crap.
It's a good football team. Still
guess
ranked,
what?
Still ranked.
We still have a shot. Still ranked. USC's lost one. We could get the head-to-head tiebreaker against them this weekend because it is a pretty big game this weekend. And guess what? It ain't going to stop after this weekend either. But let's talk about USC. I do find it funny, and I'm going to be looking at this. Is a few weeks ago with the Rams game. There's a picture of the Coliseum, and then they took a picture of the USC-Texas game Coliseum, and it was night and day difference. So I'm really
just
intrigued.
Terrible fans. Terrible football fans in that city.
I can't wait to see how full, if the USC-Utah crowd will be bigger than the Rams crowd again.
Well, according to their head coach, USC-Utah is a nice little rivalry. So that's pretty cool to be USC's rival. I think everybody coming in was like, well, who do you think is going to be the rival? And they said, well, it'd be cool to be USC's rival. Do you think we can do that? And if you've got a SoCal quarterback who drives him down the field and scores a touchdown as time expires to win that game, that's a good start to a rivalry. And Utah has given USC more of a run for their money than any other team in the South since the Pac-10 turned into the Pac-12. I haven't won a lot of games, but they've been more interesting than most, and you don't have to. You know, didn't USC beat UCLA 15-0 a few years ago?
Oh, yeah.
And Utah doesn't usually do that, and so they're always... we've earned USC's respect, but I think really being a rival is going to take one more win.
One more win by Utah coming this Saturday. But, I mean, so here's the interesting thing. So just looking at USC's schedule here, Western Michigan, they scored 49. They crushed Stanford 42-24. They beat Texas in double OT 27. Cal, they beat 30-20. Washington State, they lose 30-27. And then they beat Oregon with 38. I just see this is where I get excited, and I know this ain't some big sample size or harsh statistic or anything.
Five games is
but
a lot of games.
They've got a few games under their belt. They're scoring. You throw out the 40 plusers, and you're look. I mean, even then, if you throw out their lowest and their highest, I mean, they're going in that mid 30s point game, and then but Utah's defense is better than all of these defenses I'm seeing.
Utah's
going to be in this
good.
Game.
Yes, yes.
This is a winnable game, and I think Utah's scheme this season plays better into what USC's weaknesses are than it does into Stanford. I mean, Utah is this year is a pass first. Pinch me is a pass first team with a really good secondary and a solid and a really good defense. Just say overall, particularly good at takeaways. Stanford has a better secondary than they do a run defense, which is why USC was able to blow them out, because they rode Ronald Jones to about 200 yards in that game. And a really good secondary. I'm all over the place. But USC's weaknesses are Sam Darnold throws too many interceptions, and their defense is not weak, but is just generally beatable. And any which way kind of works against them. Whether it was Stanford, it was sort of strength against strength. Here, they're sort of spread out pretty evenly. And there isn't anything they do particularly poorly or particularly well. So Utah should be able to sort of play their game, and their game is gonna have whatever success it's gonna have, and it's not gonna be playing into those strengths the way it was against Stanford. And what I'm hoping for is turnovers. I mean, one thing that killed the Utes against Stanford was the up till then league leader in takeaways didn't get any. But Sam Darnold has not been the Sam Darnold he was last year. I think he's got 9 interceptions on the season, which is as many as he had all last year. And I think a lot of that's due to a lack of wide receiver talent. There was a lot of talk all throughout USC's camp about who's going to be the wide receiver? Who's going to be the wide receiver? And eventually they've got guys. I mean, there's USC. They've got guys. But there isn't – Juju Smith-Schuster is not on this team. There isn't a guy who's a five-star burner who you just can't cover, who can go up and get anything. And Darnold's not finding open guys because they're not as open as they were. And Utah's secondary is, frankly, lights out. They're really, really good. I'm more confident than I should be about this game.
Yeah, it's surprising. Like, had you asked me right after USC, I would have said, let's just run a Wildcat offense and hope to not get blown out. But I've come around, and the more I think about it, like, our football, like, the world did not end. Our football team is still pretty darn good. And, like, this defense is, like, it's just like any other Utah defense. This defense is good enough. Utah's going to be in the game. The question will be, well, there's actually now two questions. You used to say Utah's defense is good enough to keep us in the game. The special teams will win the special teams battle. It's whether the offense is going to put enough points. That was the question. Now the question is, or the statement is, defense is going to keep us in the game. Will the offense be able to score enough points? But hey, will our long snapper
get
be able
the ball to
the, like,
people he's supposed to get it to? Oy,
luckily, a long snapper did commit.
Yes.
So the future is looking bright at that position.
The day after that game,
the coaching staff offered a four-star line long snapper who committed the next day after receiving the offer. So I think it's fair to say that this is a priority for Utah's coaching staff. Also, just Utah's scholarship long snapper is healthy and will be playing. So we now we can hope for some, because he's been injured and we've been using
Alex Whittingham.
Is his son or his nephew?
It's his son.
His son. Oh man, can you imagine
those dinner table discussions?
I think Kyle Whittingham is a great guy and a great football coach. I think he would be tough to have as a dad. I think that would be tough. He's probably pretty grim, and he's certainly very intimidating. And can you imagine? You flub that snap, and there's a turnover on downs, and Stanford kicks a field goal, and oh, by the way, wins the game by 3 points. And now you got to have
you're taking me circle cut
ham. I mean, my goodness.
Why are you taking me back to the Stanford game? Because I will counter your cost them 3 points with hashtag Pac-12 refs not calling the roughing the kicker when Matt Gay was kicking that, because that helmet went straight into his leg. That was not a flop. No. Okay, sorry. You took me back. There were plenty of spots in that game where Utah lost or other things may have impacted.
One thing that drives me nuts about analysis is you always hear, well, this is the play they lost the game.
Right.
And the reality is there's 200 plays, and all of them can be worth 3 points. And
I will say this, since I mentioned, just in passing, small tangent, I am so annoyed with the I hate that hashtag Pac-12 refs exist, but what's pissing me off even more lately is that I realized this last weekend that I've been using that hashtag ever since Utah joined the Pac-12, and that hashtag is now showing up on College Game Day on signs. Like, Pac-12, guess what? You have a problem.
Maybe fix it.
You haven't done anything to fix it.
Nothing.
Since Utah at least has been in the Pac-12, I didn't watch it that closely beforehand. So, you've got a problem. It is very, very apparent, and you are not doing anything.
Yeah, they got to shift some funding there and get some full-time staff in place,
something.
Boards, and there's stuff you can do. It drives me nuts the way leagues go, oh gosh, what can we possibly do? It's a tough problem, and they have to do things really fast. There's stuff you can do, and you don't care enough to do it, and that's all there is to it.
So, any other thoughts on USC before we wrap this thing up?
I got to talk about injuries.
All right, let's
hear
it.
One reason why I feel like there's a good chance here is that USC team that just worked over Stanford is not the same players that we're going to see. They've lost a starting offensive lineman, their right tackle, to a pec tear. They have another tackle who's out for a knee. They've got another lineman. I think their left guard is questionable with an ankle. All of their running backs, one of USC's strengths that you saw it against Stanford was they had four really good running backs. Well, they're all hurt. They're all playing, but they're not 100%. Their linebacker core is decimated. We're not going to see Porter Gustin. We're not going to see Hunter Echols. We're not going to see Taylor Katoa. He's redshirting for the whole season. Some of the defensive linemen are out for the whole season. There are a ton of injuries. USC has played more players in the first six games that they've played, 75, than the entire season last year, where they've had 72 players on the field. There's a real injury bug at USC, and we're not seeing the same product that we were seeing at the beginning of the year. And there's a lot of opportunities to get to the quarterback, to pressure Darnold, which leads to turnovers, and then to run the ball. I think that we can really attack the linebackers and the defensive line and either find a way to have time for whoever the quarterback may be or just run the ball. I thought the Utes were pretty effective running the ball last week. Probably should have run it a few more times than they did, although when you're trailing by 10, it's hard to run the ball. And it's a surprisingly winnable game. I'm not going to pick the Utes to win, But I would pick them to cover. I think the spread opened at 11, and I think it'll be closer than that.
I believe it opened actually at 13.
Oh, definitely.
It has, it, or no, yeah, you're right. It opened at 11. It has gone up to 13. I haven't looked at it today, but either way, so you're picking USC to win. What's your score prediction? We forgot to do this.
We did, and I wish I'd done it because, man, was I spot on last week. My article, I had 27-23 for Stanford, wound up with 23-20. I think USC is going to score 31, and I think Utah is going to score 24.
All right. I'll be the optimist if I must. I'll pick...
Never get optimism.
I'll go Utah finds a way to score 24 points and beats USC's 21.
All right. And I think that's the kind of score you'll see if Utah wins this game.
I don't think this game's going to break. I don't think either team breaks 30.
Okay.
I don't think it does. And I don't know what the full... I mean, I'm not a gambler. Shocker for those who know me. But... I don't know what the total over-under is on total points, but I would take the under on this one because I'm sure they're taking more than 60.
Yeah, it doesn't have an over-under yet. The last thought I'd leave you with is Oregon scored 10 points last week. Washington State took two overtimes to get to 33 points against Boise State, who's pretty terrible this year. Having a bad offensive game does not make you a bad offensive team. It's not a good data point. It's not a good thing. You can't write it off. But it's entirely possible that Utah's going to go out there and score some points.
Yeah, I mean, we're still averaging 32 points.
That's not bad.
On the season.
That's not bad. Thank you, unfortunately, San Jose State.
Unfortunately, it's ninth in the Pac-12. But we'll get
there. Don't worry about that.
So, last thing, we're going to end it here, but let me remind you guys, as Joseph will say, stats and numbers matter, and it matters to iTunes as well. So, if we could get you guys to please subscribe and, you know, hit some of those 4 or 5 star and get us some reviews and help us be discovered by other Utah fans, that would be much appreciated. Until next week... go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk. Brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UteTalk Podcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.